Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. Friends and loyal fans, this is the 51st episode in this series. Frankly, I am astounded at how far we've come. Honestly, how far I've traveled. We have now reached beyond 36 hours of theatrical audio productions of my books for your enjoyment. If you have any concerns about the series ending, perish the thought. We are presently in the midst of Book 2 out of 6 so far. I expect to have several hundred episodes before there might be a finish to the productions years down this road. And please consider this, as I always mention, though listening is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. This website isn't free for me to maintain either. Please be generous and buy me a coffee for a dollar or more via the ko-fi.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material and website costs. As always, special thanks go to our first coffee angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha. And thank you truly for listening. Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 18. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, The Journeys of an Enchanter. Chapter 17. Gawain winked an appraising eye at his creation, then scooped up another handful of wet sand and plastered it on top of the central tower. The receding tide rolled in, coming within a few measures of breaching his sand castle, then burbled its way back into the foaming blue surf. Leaning back on his haunches for a brief rest from his imaginative chore, he looked around to see where Flaina had gotten to and found amusement with her diversion. His half-elven bride had gone to collect a few seashells with which to decorate their miniature keep, but was now following a blue crab. The panicky crustacean lurked back and forth in its sideways walk, eye stalks beaded on her as it apparently tried to decide what her exact intentions were. The enchanter smiled at her with the sand creature, remembering she had never before seen the shore or the seas. Her delight with the novelties of the sea infected him as well. Bobbing in the waves where there had been a wonderful, sensual experience, despite the water's chilly edge. Even so, though autumn was halfway through its changes and forcing them to don warmer clothing, a few lingering breaths of summer could be found in the wandering patches of warm water and breezes passing through the bay. The waves continued to lull his thoughts, easing his reflective moments until he found himself staring out at the bay, his eyes searching the horizon where sea met sky in a gentle blending of blue, as he recalled his moons as a cabin boy with Clough aboard the Sea Scout. Some of the memories were warm, some were lonely, times when he desired a female companion to complete the circle he had started with Clough. Now here he was, visiting the sea again, this fluid cycle of his life changing, spiraling upward into the next one. He was content with his wedding bond and the start of his new family, but puzzled by the changes taking place, namely, the crystal Levipia from the King of Dragons, Durbriag. And there was the stranger that had brought him home to Flayna and called him Lord. Fortunately, with the wedding and his honeymoon, all of that seemed far away right now. Shifting in place, he stretched legs out before him, brushed an irritating pebble off a knee of his breeches, and leaned back on his elbows to gaze at the sky, luxuriating in the wind's caress over his skin, while glancing occasionally to see where Flayna had gone. Several times a gust blew her skirt up, billowing her in a wash of color, and he enjoyed the fleeting glimpse of her shapely legs glowing in the sunlight. Stimulated by recent memories of the passionate nights consummating their bond, he smiled happily to himself.
Lovely creature, isn't she?
Gawain lazily turned his head up and smiled warmly at his love brother standing over him.
What brings you our way, Clough? I thought you were still rummaging through your grandmother's old tree lodge.
The elf shrugged easily, waved at Flayna, who was now comparing seashells in her hands, and sat down on the opposite side of the sandcastle. Unbuckling his baldric and cinch, he slipped off his sheathed sword and laid it beside him.
I finished that nonsense a couple of days ago, and I decided I missed you. Besides, 'tis your birthday, so I decided to come help you celebrate.
I was missing you, too. And you've never forgotten my birthday.
Clough rubbed a bit of wind-blown sand out of a tapered ear.
'Twas your 12th when we met. How can I forget?
He frowned in serious consideration of the miniature keep erected between them.
Not a bad design, though the juncture of your east and south bailey walls may be a little sharp. Attackers could hide around the corner.
Leaning this way and that, he got different perspectives.
I like your towers, though.
Thanks, though I'm nothing remotely related to a stonemason or keep right.
Gawain looked back at Flayna. She was digging in the surf sand with a shell in pursuit of a flea crab. She had been fascinated by the little bubbles in the beach that appeared right after a wave washed across the sand.
I'm sure your lovely wife would prefer a tree lodge.
The elf, too, watched her dig.
We've discussed that. I like the idea, too. Much easier to build, defend, and maintain. And not as cold, or so they say.
Not if you build it correctly.
Clough turned his attention back to the sandcastle and, after a moment, patted a little more shape into the crenellations of the wall.
We never have discussed how you two met originally. All I remember is you coming back from Forum with her waiting at Trimble's for you.
We met down in Druidic territory, not far from the marshy lands.
Clough stopped and frowned for a moment, then nodded.
Oh, yes. You accompanied Rethwald back to his temple just before your trip to see Master Enchanter Rothson. I've always liked druids and their prophetic practices. The closest man has come to being elfin.
Interesting observation.
So you met Flayna among the druids?
No. Let me start this tale properly.
Flayna was born of an elfin mother and human father in one of the new outposts located in the southwest area of the foothills. Her parents were one of six original families chosen to band together, explore, and claim unmapped areas of Rue. Flayna was born about 3 riads after the group established their infantile village. This was a mark of good fortune for her to be growing up in such a small group. She was not subjected to the prejudices surrounding half-breeds in the larger towns. Now, our girl has a touch of the explorer from her father's blood.
She preferred to do hunting with the men instead of cooking and such, though this is not to say she can't cook. As a child, she became frustrated when, after several requests to her father, she was refused the privilege of accompanying the hunters. Regardless, after they'd gone, she would borrow a friend's bow, arrows, and long blade, and then stalk the hunting party for days. On one such hunt, the mountain men had gotten restless in the hills and were abound in packs. They aren't all that malicious, but they are thoughtless and clumsy, not caring about the havoc they wreak when they tear through forest and field, frightening away the game and wrestling with grizzlies. The men of the outpost were posed with the impossible task of scaring off the mountain men in order to protect their village and territory and to prevent attacks by angered bears. Finding a pack of the brutes watering at a stream, the outpost men attacked with arrows and sling stones. This quickly turned into a throwing match with the mountain men flinging giant handfuls of pebbles back at them. Several struck Flena's father, nearly crippling his weapon arm. Seeing him wounded, Flena saw her moment and leapt into the fray, loosing arrows like lightning.
Singing bow, fair Flena.
Yeah. Her presence helped make the fight victorious. She dodged all incoming attacks while striking many painful targets among the mountain men. They ran back to their caves in the hills with quite a few of her pins in their shoulders and rears. Needless to say, from this point on, she was judged capable and was allowed to accompany the men on their hunts as well as receive sword fighting lessons. And where this may seem unusual in the larger towns and cities surrounded by walls and soldiers in sheer numbers, outpost people appreciate fighting talent as it improves their collective strength. Her quick bow helped to scare off future raiders, too.
No doubt.
With this story in mind, you can understand why she was given the task of exploring as her final test of adult maturity, which, if she performed suitably, would make her a freeman in her own right and a member of the village's growing council.
Instead of the usual test to prove her suitability for marriage, she wanted to be a council member? That's quite a woman.
Gawain smiled proudly. Yes, I know.
So how did she fare?
Sitting tailor fashion, the elf leaned forward and rested elbows on his knees. She was sent out from the village with 2 days' rations, her choice of weapons, and the task of exploring areas south for at least 6 days. She took her own bow, quiver, and her father's long hunting blade.
I don't know. Being her parents and having to send her out into the frontier alone, it must have been hard for them.
Gawain considered this as he watched another wave approach and recede, just missing his toes. Perhaps, but I'm sure they expected her elfin instincts to preserve her. After 4 days, she penetrated the druidic territories unknowingly and discovered a rather large pool of black muck that bubbled and steamed, which set her to wondering if it was oil-based. Oil is a necessity frequently left wanting during the cold moons and long nights when trade wagons are few and far between. She used a hollow stone to hold a small amount of it and successfully set it aflame by striking sparks from 2 pieces of quartz. Unfortunately, while she rejoiced over her discovery, she ignored the pool behind her. A slucker surfaced and grabbed her with several of its tentacles.
A slucker? I haven't heard of this.
Not many have, because they're so rare. What their true name might be, I don't know, but the common name came from the sound they make sinking into a pool. Retwal told me how to avoid their most likely hiding place. Animals will shy away from one's habitat. Sluckers look like a large, bloated quill wart, kind of fat. Clough tried to picture the grassy swamp plant as fat, but had difficulty. Sluckers have no eyes or ears, but are very sensitive to movement, and according to Retwal, they digest any meat. They hide under the surface of their pools until prey is close enough, then surface quietly and ensnare it with their grass-like tentacles and drag it in. And being in oily muck, it's difficult for anything to float. Prey that tries to fight only tires itself out quicker and gets pulled under.
Horrid.
As fortune would have it, I was nearby when she screamed, though I'm sure she never hoped for anyone to be within 100 dragon lengths. I was just leaving the Druid lands at that time.
Slender hands tousled Gaewon's hair.
I will never forget that day, my love.
Flayna smiled warmly at his upturned face, then tucked her light skirt beneath her and sat beside him.
Such a frightful story, though.
Clough wanted to know how we'd first met. She nodded absently and gazed off to see the gulls flocking to where she had dug up the wet sands.
The monster kept putting more and more tentacles around me. It was all I could do just to keep my head clear. Then I felt my legs being pulled into the warm muck. I caught a glimpse of someone running toward me. I couldn't believe anyone was so close.
She closed her eyes and watched it happen again.
He raised his hands, and suddenly the air buzzed and hissed with yellow lights flying at the slucker and hitting with a sizzle like roasting meat. It released me almost entirely, maybe figuring I was already trapped in its muck, and reached several tentacles for him. I heard him hum. And as the tentacles touched, there was a loud crackle of blue fire. I saw no more after that. I was too occupied with crawling out of the pool, which wasn't easy.
Ugh!
The stuff seemed to suck on my limbs. I remember being lifted and blacking out, but not for long. When I awoke, I was covered with oil and lying in a bed of leaves. This same man, whose face was concealed by his hood, was wiping me off. Not sure whether I was dreaming or not, I reached up and yanked back his hood. You looked back at me with so much surprise.
Hello.
Anyway, after a few days together, the same man asked if I would be his traveling companion. Since I had to return home and finish my rite of passage, Gaewon suggested I find him in Hopetown when I was ready.
Clough slapped his knee.
Perhaps I'll find such a fair flower drowning in a puddle.
Ah, you had first call on this young beauty a long time ago.
What's this?
The elf sat up with renewed interest. 'Twas back when we were minstreling. Our company stopped at several outpost villages, including Flayna's.
Huh?
Clough's jaw dropped as he blinked at them both. Gaewon quirked an eyebrow at his love brother. Don't you remember? She was one of the villagers that came behind the stage wagon to thank us. Now it was Flayna's turn to be surprised as she remembered.
Why, this is truth. I remember now. I thought Gaewon was a bit aloof among his pleasantness, but you...
She looked at Clough with a coquettish gleam.
Yes, you were very cute, but rather brisk. Oh, well, boys.
Crab nails.
Clough thumped his fist on the sand.
Of all the times to feel like being alone.
Why, Clough?
Flayna smiled provocatively as she hugged close to Gaewon and stroked her fingers across his chest through the sternum gap in his tunic.
Are you jealous?
Of course.
Truth?
By my sword, if I hadn't been quiet that night, I could have saved Gaewon.
His furious expression softened to a grin as her smile hardened to a playful glower.
Oh, you! You!
She snatched a handful of sand and flung it at him as he ducked. She grabbed one of the sandcastle towers, severing it from its base, and tossed it at the elf as Gaewon's arms came around to embrace her tightly. She struggled for a moment, then stopped as he whispered something in her ear. Eyes gleaming with interest, soon she was grinning gleefully at Clough. He rose from his defensive posture and tossed off clumps of sandcastle.
What words have passed? I must know the jest on the fire.
The price for having a jest at her expense. I mentioned your night with Caemid.
Caemid?
The elf blinked in mild shock, then squinted suspiciously.
unaware that anyone knew about his handful of passionate romps with the tall, buxom, red-haired girl at one of the outlying villages. Their brief relationship in his early tweens had resulted in more than one night together.
I'm curious the Gaewon doesn't know more, but that was several riads past. Kaemid ended the affair, admitting she wanted to explore romance by her own choice before marrying the man chosen by her family. A continued relationship with an elf would have caused her problems with the underlying prejudice embraced by some of her village, let alone defying her familial duties to marry the man designated for her.
Though hurt by her callousness, they had professed love for each other.
I understood it was her way of cleanly and quickly ending our relationship for both our sakes.
Out of respect for her delicate situation and to preserve her reputation among her own,
I never mentioned it to anyone, including Gaewon. If Kaemid had been the daughter of a freeman, like Flayna, she could have chosen whomever she wanted. As it was, her father was a villain and farmer, and thraldom to a baron. Though a freeman in many respects, he still had to carry out those duties meted out by his lord, including who would marry whom, in order to keep only desirable offspring as village residents and future villains.
In retrospect, Clough accepted the circumstance of the brief, torrid coupling as a result of youthful urges on both their parts.
What do you know about her?
He tried not to sound worried. Just enough. Call it deductive reasoning. But do not fret, my dearest friend. We know absolutely nothing about any ladies of your past. Clough pursed his lips and winked an eye at them.
Methinks I'd better find other amusement than that of picking on Flayna.
Which would mean picking on me again. Flayna stood up and brushed off her skirt.
Let's do it over supper, then. I'm hungry. Here to join us, Clough?
Clearly not expecting the invitation, he looked at her with mild shock.
Twouldn't be proper for me to intrude on your honeymoon retreat? You've a fortnight left.
But 'tis proper for you to hang outside our Hopetown window in the mornings? Nonsense. He took Flayna's offered hand as he got up and eased an expected cramp in his thigh. Your intrusion is always welcome, but... just for supper, mind you.
Of course. Who would I be to whisk you away from Flayna?
Oh, you too.
With exasperation, Flayna tugged her husband along. Not so welcome, however, was the scroll bearing the king's service seal and the marshal's decree delivered the next morning via messenger deputy.
Oh, God.
Incensed with the royally charged conscription order, Gaewon and Flayna nevertheless recognized the potential threat and their necessary services. The sooner they started the chase, the better. There was no doubt that once Calron was allowed to collect himself and his forces, his first intent would be revenge. Collecting their belongings, they fetched Clough from a nearby cottage and headed north back to Hopetown and a desperate manhunt. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 18 are performed by Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H. the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Florian Sorrell of Tiny Music, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by MixKit of Victoria, Australia, freesound.org, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.